With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
To We Want Winners, Rod and I are here a few hours after the game in which the 49ers kind of got shredded by the Rams. A game in which I was there live. And Rod, I can't imagine the TV broadcast was too kind to the 49ers. I'm kind of glad I didn't have to hear the call today.
Yeah, it was, you know, it got late pretty early. You know how they do in terms of trying to keep interest. But yeah, it was not. It was pretty bad. And like we had talked a little bit before on air, I rarely have like predictions or feeling, but me and my brother were watching the game and I was like, man, these dudes could get boat raced, because you know, I've been talking to fans all week about you know, and they keep referencing week five, and I don't know, sometimes I get the feeling that our fan base doesn't really watch much football. That team is way better than they were week five, and you know, We are what we are. We just, you know, it's a lot of it is not due to anything but numbers. But yeah, it was, I kind of had, this was like a foreshadowing situation, and it was pretty rough to watch.
You know, we're going to talk a little bit about the Shanahan and McVay head to head. Shanahan still leads that head to head, by the way, though McVay has the most important games.
Yeah.
And I was watching, you know, being there live, you're like, okay, what's the vibe? How do people feel? And there were some Rams fans there, but not a lot. Like, I was actually surprised, because, you know, you go to a Giants game and the Giants fans, you know, they feel like they can make a lot of money selling tickets to Dodger fans for to go to Oracle. Mm-hmm. But at Levi's, it was a sea of red. So the 49er fans represented. They were ready to go. They were ready to explode at every possible opportunity. And it was rare. There were rare moments in this game for the fans to get too excited. And as I'm watching it, so obviously coin toss. Niners won the coin toss. And they defer, like they always defer. They want to play defense. They let their defense set the tone. Then they get the second half kickoff. They hope to game plan to where they can score late in the first half and then score again. And that's kind of a tempo changer. And for the first time in a long time, I had this thought, which was, maybe we should have taken the ball, because by deferring, what you're letting the Rams do is you're letting the Rams kind of just show how much better they are than you immediately. And not to say if the Niners took the kickoff that they would have been, you know, that anything would have changed. I am sure the game would have been very similar. But I thought, like, if you want to showcase, or if you want to find some opportunities to maybe upset the Rams in this game. One of those ways would be possibly holding the football for very long periods of time and getting a lead and scoring and making them have to play comeback football. And so obviously it didn't happen. This is the Niners' identity. They always defer. And the Rams went down the field as if it was 7-on-7, just passing league. That's what it looked like out there. And one of the things about being there live at the game that you can see is you can see a lot of the defensive backfield and their communications and what the movement does before the snap to the DBs. And then as the routes are being run, you can see a lot of the confusion. And there was a lot of confusion with the Niners' young defensive secondary because you were seeing routes where there were two guys in similar spaces and one was going one way and the one was going the other way. And the 49ers defender thought that they were passing them off to the other guy and they really weren't. It was like their guy. So there was lots of confusion there. And just immediately, they just went right down the field, scored. And I was like, that was what I feared was going to happen. And then the Niners, I wish Shanahan would have called plays with a little bit more urgency, because he had to have felt what I as a fan felt, which is if we don't do something, that this game could get out of hand pretty quickly. And there were multiple plays on third down that they called where I was like, man, that is not an urgent play call. And as you saw, they could not run the ball for anything except for Brian Robinson had a couple of good runs. But Christian was just running into a pile of blue seemingly every single time. And we'll talk about Mac because I thought Mac played well. But the difference in Mac and Brock, I think we've mentioned many times what the difference is in our eyes. But another thing that we haven't actually mentioned is there's really no fear on the other side that Mac's going to rip it downfield. They were pretty comfortable really taking away the run and saying, Mac Jones, you and your, your three and or your three number three receivers, see if you guys can beat us. And the Niners couldn't. Like they were able to, he was 33 of 39 or something. So he did his job, but there was no fear by the Rams defense that they were going to hit anything over the top, anything for big plays, anything for, crazy tempo changing gains. Everything was just kind of in front. And, Niners receivers made some good plays. We've been talking about Kittle. Kittle came to life today. I think he was 8 for 94 or something like that. Juwan had a drop, which was probably a pass interference. He also had the unfortunate fumble, which just as it felt like the Niners were coming to life and then he fumbled and it and the Rams just took it down the field the other way. But he also had, other than that, he had a good game. So there were signs, but still, man, you look at Puka, you look at Adams, and you go, okay, who on the Niners is even close to those guys right now? And from a wide receiver perspective, nobody's even close. Like the best Niners receiver, Juwan Jennings, is either third or fourth Rams receiver. Kendrick Bourne, push that back. Does Kendrick Bourne even make their team? So
yeah,
discrepancies of talent on the field in full display. And, to give the Niners some credit, a lot of this is just based on injury, but you don't have BA, you don't have Pretty Ricky, and you're kind of going out there going like, man, we have to kind of dominate the ball, control the game. And from Jump Street, they were playing catch up and there was just no way. Like that was the worst set of narrative that the 49ers could play in a game like that today was to get behind early and try and play catch up. There's just no way they couldn't. It had to be the opposite. They dominate the football. They run 40 times. They win the time of possession and they force the Rams to play comeback, that which was kind of like that game earlier this season. And it just wasn't the same thing. And so I just thought that kind of watching from the beginning and seeing how it played out, this is probably the worst way that it could have started and that it could have played out. Like, this is the way that the Rams were going to win and win big. And they did.
Yeah, it's there were several things that came. Like you say, the inability to run the ball. And then this, which flies in the face of, you know, our internet faithful who are telling, you know, who just have this bee in their bonnet about how Brian Robinson should just be playing more. And he's like, well, see, he just, you know, 5 carries for 24 yards and a touchdown. Well, they're playing dime and they're down. Down 3 scores. I mean, all right. At a certain point, the Rams are going to give you, if you want to run the ball, sure, you're going to have it. You're going to take, you know, 7-8 minutes off the clock, and you're still going to be down by, you know, it was so game script dependent. And it was obvious that when they decided to stop the run,
yeah,
there was just nothing there for the Niners to get. And it's interesting that you saw that. But that's what I saw in terms of the Rams, you know, kind of shell defense, is that there were several, and Brady pointed them out on the broadcast, there were several opportunities for Brock to, there were deep passes, like a couple of deep overs to Robinson that were there for Brock, that when you're down,
you mean Mac,
you know. Yeah, Mac, when you're down 3 scores, that you got to rip. And Brady's like, you got to rip that.
Yeah.
You know, there were a couple of them where, you know, Robinson was basically open, yeah. Not DeMarcus Robinson, not Brian Robinson, deep down the field. And, you know, Brock took the shorter throw, which, you know, again, as the if you're the Rams, You'll give that up because, you know, you've got a long way to go back. So it was interesting that you could see that Mac just is not going to, he's not going to take those deep throws. And then the quandary with Mac is that if you throw the ball with him 40 times, he's going to throw it to the other team a couple. He's going to give them opportunities to make plays. That's just
that. Can I tell you how true you are about that? So Niners are coming back. Obviously, it's 4 down territory from here on out. And I was saying there was a play. I think there was a play where Kyle ran it. And I was like, I get it. He thinks that they have 3rd and 4th down because they're going for it on 4th down.
Yeah.
And I said, but what he is not playing the percentages of is that Mac is due to throw a pick, because the pressure on a 4th down pass is much bigger than a 2nd down pass. The pressure on a 3rd and long is much bigger than a 2nd down pass. And what's going to happen is he is going to have to force something in, and it is going to be intercepted. Literally 2 plays later is when the pick happened. And I was like, again, Shanahan knows all of this stuff, but he's, you know, he's calling the game to Max's capacity, right? He thinks Mac is going to, this is what Mac's going to do. He's going to read this right. This is going to be open. Boom. And then Mac is prone to make mistakes. Everybody is prone to make mistakes. Stafford tried to throw us the ball one time, and I think Renardo Green just let it slip through his hands. But that would have been a perfect opportunity for the 49ers to gain some momentum. But I wanted to point out one thing. MD said, no penalty calls on the Rams today, hard going against 18 players. There were a couple calls that I think 49er fans probably thought needed to go their way. But there was only one that I saw that I thought was kind of game-changing. There was a screen to Puka that he scored on. And I forget who it was, but the Niners had a DB who was supposed to be there. And an offensive lineman, like, two-hand shoved him in the back out of the way. And then when they threw the screen to Puka, I forget who the tight end or the wide receiver was blocking. He's there blocking a good second before Puka catches the ball. So those two miscalls on the same play, yeah, that is problematic, though who's to say that the Rams don't score on the very next play. The rest of the stuff was kind of like, yeah, they're fine. You know, I could see some of that stuff where, you know, Juwan was interfered with a couple of times on passes. But then Juwan was also offsides. That's not a referee's fault. That's a Juwan problem. You know, they ran out the play clock. Like, that's not the referee's fault there. So, you know, I'll give the screen to Puka. I think that should have been called back. They should have had to do that again. But other than that, that's the only one I thought was truly game changing. And when you lose by, what did they lose by? 20 points or whatever it was. It's hard to say that, you know, that the referees were too big of at fault. 42-26. So you lost by 16 points to over two touchdowns. It's hard to blame the refs on that kind of game, but I get the frustration. Of course, there's always going to be stuff there when there's some pretty bad miscalls, but I don't think that most of them really affected the game.
There's a tweet here. I'm sorry. I went away from it, so I don't have attributions, but so I apologize. Mac was 22 for 27 on passes 1 to 7 yards today. out of his 39 attempts. Yeah. So, I mean, kind of, and I did not have that stat as I was watching the game, but it was clear that he just isn't, that's just not his game. It has worked for him that he just kind of takes, you know, he's going to take the layups that the defense gives him. And, you know, that this was one of those games where just the game script dictated that you needed to be just a little bit more aggressive, because if you're down two or three scores, you really don't have, you know, the Rams are going to take that. They'll give you that. You're matriculating, as Hank Stram, you said, matriculating down the field, and if you're going to take 7 or 8 minutes to get these points, we just know we're going to score on you guys. You know, we can't go back and forth. You have to get stops, number one, which it was pretty clear early that. And I had kind of made that joke, you know, I'm not going to lie, I'd be trolling our fans online, because they don't look at the game, you know, realistically. And it's like, you know, the Rams are going to be like Burger King today. They're going to have it their way, however they want it. If they want to run it, they'll be able to run it. If they want to pass it, they're going to be able to pass it. And there were a couple of times, Brady had a good game, had a good call today. There were several times where he's with the telestrator. There was no edge to be had on the outside, you know, and it would be on outside runs. It was like they had blocked it up to where it was 7 or 8 yards. It was just, it was bad. It was, and again, it's Salah is a hell of a play caller, and there were several defensive plays that he called that were excellent blitzes. It's just, you know, he's really literally out there coaching with both hands tied behind his back in terms of the personnel that he has out there, especially on the defensive line. You know, the young guys, they're just young. And, you know, and then the guys that have experienced are just not very good. So, I mean, it's tough to watch him try to make chicken salad. It's just because it's just hard. It's a rough go, especially against teams as good as the Rams.
So, you know, one thing about that though, the Niners didn't make a deal at the deadline. And we were hoping that they were not going to you know, give up a ton, because they are not one player away. Mm-mm. But I do wonder, like, how much Salah was kind of like, hey guys, like, we need some depth. And, you know, one of the other things you can see live is as you can see a lot of the line play actually. And you know, I was telling my son, JJ, I was like, if the Niners defensive line could just stand up straight and not get pushed backwards, and similarly the offensive line too, but if they could just stand up straight and not get pushed backwards, you know, that's a win at this point. Now, they don't even need to push the Rams offensive line backwards. They just need to stand them up, and it just was not happening. And you kind of wonder if you're Saleh, you're like, hey, I don't need an A or a B plus. Like, give me a couple C pluses who still have some juice, and that we don't have to give up a lot for. But I don't know who is out there. It seemed like almost everybody who was halfway decent went for a bounty of a pick. Like, I didn't see many like, oh, such and such went for a seventh round draft pick. It looks like it was a seller's market this deadline, which unfortunate for the 49ers because they didn't want to give up anybody. But, you know, everyone was so excited because Bryce Huff played, and I was like, fantastic. At least maybe we'll see some pressure. But like you said, outside of blitzes, you know, there wasn't much. Like, Matt Stafford was, you know, that dude, if he had a sandwich in his back pocket, he could have taken a couple bites before throwing the football. Like, that's just what it was today.
Yeah, as we talked about last week, I'm glad they didn't do anything because Lynch was pretty transparent about how the market just got away from him. And there were players that they were in on that, you know, you might be interested in giving a fourth or a fifth, but now it's a second or a third. And then you can't be in the business of, and he's addressed this, and I wholeheartedly agree, you can't be given seconds and thirds for 8-game rentals. They're not. If you're the Eagles, that's one thing, and you feel like, you know, a guy can, you know, put you over the top in terms of winning a championship. We aren't that. And look, and also, I was looking at the standings and playoff ramifications. Basically, right now, the Niners are, it's them and whoever are the two bottom teams in the NFC North are basically, those three teams are playing for two spots. Mm-hmm. So it really, when it's all said and done, and look, they should go on a run now. I don't like to play the games on paper. I'm not that guy. But when you look at the next four games, I'm not going to say you write them in pen or pencil, but they are winnable games.
Yep.
They are definitely winnable games. And so I get it. You want, as a fan, you want to see your team strive to, you know, do the best they can. And like you said, when you've got a coach like Saleh, if you just give him something, you know, but I just think that we would have felt awful in April if we had, you know, and that's cold comfort today when you're trying to win games and be the best you can this season. But I just really believe that for where this team is in terms of the talent disparity between the top teams in the conference, I just think you let the young, and I said this last week, I think you let the young players play, you get them as much experience as you can, and you try to do your best to win these games. But I don't think you mortgage the future. You don't trade 4-year cost control contracts for 8 games. I just don't agree with the notion. Again, and when you're talking about who are you going to get, I mean, if you want to, you know, what Jalen Phillips went for a third, you could make the case that is worth it if you're going to re-sign him, because that is also, you know, the calculus that has to be made, is if you're going to go for a player of that caliber, he's young enough to kind of match with your core, which I guess is more of a NBA concept than an NFL concept. But, you know, you have to think about that. Is he a guy who is going to be here longer than the end of this season? Then you make that deal. But you know, you're not trading, and we said this last week, not trading fourth and fifth round picks for the Arden Keys of the world. I'm just not doing that. Yeah. It's just those type of moves aren't going to move the needle enough that when I get to April, that I'm looking and saying, I sure wish I had that fifth round pick. I sure wish I had that fourth round pick. You know, I just, you know, you basically at this point, and you're not going to rebuild your roster in November. That's just not how this works. So you take your lumps, you try to, you know, make some moves on the margins. It kind of looks like that kid White, you know, he's clearly got talent. You know, I was specious of the move because, you know, he's played 1,500 reps and really doesn't have much to show for it. But when you're talking about a sixth round pick or seventh round pick or whatever, it was a pick swap, I guess is what it was, what it essentially came down to, you know, okay, talented kid, take the shot. That's fine. I just wouldn't have been in the market for giving up, you know, what those players started going for. It was crazy what trading two firsts for. I'm not trading two firsts for anything at this point.
You know what? Maybe that's why they got out ahead of it, you know, a week earlier or whatever, because they kind of knew that when the clock was coming down to it, like when deadline day was, that they probably figured that it was a seller's market, so they probably tried to get out ahead of that early, which was smart.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
But I want to shout out the chat, because we have Rams fans and Seahawks fans in the chat right now. And I love it. Like, this is what NFC West football is about. And look, you know, MDs, he's holding it down for us. He's holding it down for 49er fans. But I don't hate on other fans coming into a specific podcast, because how do you know about these other teams? Well, you listen to people talk about those teams. And so shout out to let me go through some shout out to 6233666. Shout out to Yeser Afim, who I think he's a Seahawks guy. You know, the only one here who's kind of a little talking out of class here, Jim Everett the Great. Now, he's kind of trolling us a little bit, but
Chris,
Jim Everett was many things. I don't know if I would label Jim great, but hey, if you're an Everett guy, all good. I just remember when Everett fell down and phantomly sacked himself because he was hearing Cordana footsteps. But you know, I love the chat, because it just tells you that, you know, these games are more meaningful than regular games. You know, 49ers against Texans, like, that game infuriated me, but outside of the 49ers and outside of Texans, who really cares? At Rams and 49ers is still a big deal. The other thing, Jim Everett's kind of trolling Levi's. There was a guy who was sitting a few rows in ahead of us, and he was a Rams fan, and he was just trolling all game long. And I found it funny because, you know, the Rams don't really have a home stadium, because, you know, they have a home stadium, but it's mostly fans of the other team, you know, who are there. And the Niners are historically, like, they feel very welcome in that stadium because the Niner fans travel. the Rams fans did not travel to Levi's, by the way, but for those who did, I'm sure they got a kick out of that because they're so used to it on the other side where the Niners fans are out there in droves and winning the game. But anyways, I'm down for it. I do not mind the Seahawks and the Rams fans getting on us a little bit. We're not rah-rah cheerleading 49er fans. Like, we want them to win, but there's a realistic aspect to what we do as well. So
I respect it. You know, that's how, like you say, how else do you learn about the other teams other if you're not gonna, you know, brave their territory and go in there and see what's going on in Ninerland. So I appreciate that. Thank y'all.
Yeah, no, I love it. So one of the things, and I was going back, I want to go back to the Shanahan and McVay thing. I don't know if this meant anything, and I don't know if you caught any of this, but outside of one time, I think, at least as far as I can remember, because, you know, we as the game was getting away from us, we weren't super paying attention to all the intricacies because the game was done. But the Rams kicker was not trying to, on kickoffs, he was not trying to position the ball in any way. This dude was trying to kick it through the other uprights. And you know what that told me? And I don't know if this is really what it was, but it was almost like McVay telling Shanahan, like, you're on 35, go for it. Like, here's a gift. Like, we're not messing with this thing. Like, we're up 21-0. So be it. You know, show us. Like, almost like, not, I don't know if it was disrespectful or if it was gamesmanship. I don't know. Maybe the Rams just do this. Maybe they don't really care about the kickoff because I think their special teams are one of the worst in the league. So maybe that it's just like, you know, that is how they do it. So they don't have to actually cover. But I was like, oh my gosh, I wonder if he's baiting or if this is gamesmanship in any way. And then there were other moments in the game where I was like, yeah, they're doing this play on third down, which isn't safe because they just know they're going for it on fourth down anyways. They're going to take their two shots, and they feel very comfortable with this 49ers defense. And that is the thing that probably infuriated Shanahan. But Shanahan probably knew it was coming because he would do the same thing on the other side. But I just like that, you know, that gamesmanship that these dudes have because they're buddies, but they're super competitive and they want to kill each other more than they want to kill some of these other teams. But did you sense any like McVay kind of trying to come into Shanahan's house and, you know, shove it up his rear end kind of moments?
Absolutely. They were super disrespectful, I thought, in terms of just like you pointed out, in terms of they not really having a whole lot of respect for what they were going to be able to do offensively versus them. And then it was really, really frustrating to watch Matthew Stafford just kind of carve us up. And I mean, there was a stretch there after they scored the first 21 points where they had a stretch where they didn't really do anything, but it didn't have anything to do with us. They missed some plays and they were there. He just flat missed them. It was very disheartening. And it was clear that there was really nothing we weren't going to be able to give much resistance to them defensively. Again, it's just, you know, it's a talent gap at this point. And they are a really good football team. And I hate that because, you know, I don't really like them much. And it's not anything. It doesn't really have any. You talk about a rivalry. It's just I've grown up my entire life, you know, same old sorry ass Rams is my generation. And, you know, anytime they're any sort of good, it, you know, it kind of hurts my soul.
You know what? Also, McVay didn't do. We could have got the welcome home Jimmy G, and Jimmy didn't even get a snap today. They're up. They're killing us. And Jim Garoppolo could have been in there, could have got a little bit of a. I think the fans would have welcomed him. They wouldn't have booed Jimmy. And yeah, he didn't even get that moment. Stafford's like, nope, not even giving you guys the Jimmy G moment.
Oh, we could have thanked Jimmy for the good times.
No, oh, man, that was too bad. One of the other things, and you know, I don't want to hang out too much in like the X's and O's of this game, because that's really not what this game was about. It was about a talent issue on both sides. But I also sort of, you know, you could see who they were targeting on the Niners, getting lots of safeties in coverage. They were definitely targeting the safeties in coverage. But Luke Gifford, they were just like, okay, who's Luke Gifford on? And we are just throwing the football that way. There was one time he didn't really break it up, but he defended it. But you can tell he was like scared out of his mind, because I don't even think he turned around to look at the pass. But
absolutely,
like it was just it was. I felt really bad for that guy, because obviously, like that's, you know, he's not out there to cover, but he's not. It's not like he was on a wide receiver; he's like on a tight end. And it kind of, I saw the point made in I think it was Matt Barros who said, you know, at what point does Nick Martin like need to get on the field? Because obviously part of the reason that they signed him or that they drafted him is because he's a really good athlete and he's really fast. And maybe it is throwing him out to the wolves at this point against, you know, one of the best quarterbacks out there. I'm sure he would have also been a target, but I would rather them give that opportunity to Nick Martin, because Luke Gifford isn't defending that play anytime. Like it's just not happening. So you might as well give the young guy some reps, but you kind of wonder like, what does it take to get that guy on the field? What is he not doing in practice? You know, what is he not giving them as far as, you know, whatever that they want to see from him to give him some snaps? Cause you watch Luke Gifford and you're like, why is this dude playing? You're not saying like, oh, you know, at least when you watch Tatum Bethune, you see some of the stuff that he's doing. Like, I don't know that I've seen Luke Gifford make a play all year long where I was like, dang, that was a really good play.
Yeah. They had talked about, and I don't even know if that ended up happening. I don't see him in the box score. To a lesser extent, it's the same thing with Valdez. You know, our defensive line is kind of trash. Why isn't, you know, he was like a sensation during the preseason.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what's happening, you know, in, you know, day to day, week to week in terms of preparation and being ready out there. But, you know, this is, I don't know. I guess it's difficult because we are still a competitive football team. So it's not like you can just, you know, empty the bench and let these dudes, you know, just let them out there and play. But it's one of those situations where, again, I don't even know if either of those guys were even active today. But this would be a scenario where you get those guys reps, because I imagine as a coach, it's a fine line that you're coaching to play. You're playing to win the game, obviously, but it became pretty clear pretty early that, because we were never even really playing for a tie at any point, let alone, you know, driving to, you know, to go ahead. It was really an uphill battle all game. And at a certain point, I think you have to get those guys, especially those two in particular, because they are players at positions of need. We need to know what we have at linebacker. We need to know who are people who we can count on the defensive line, as we are clearly going to need to, you know, spend a lot of draft capital and free agent capital on rebuilding that line again. it would be nice to know who you have that you can count on as at least even rotational players, I would think. But so it's interesting as we move forward. And I don't, again, I don't like to say the schedule lightens up, but there are spots here where you could get these guys in to play to see. You know, I'm interested to see. I know what Valdez looked like in preseason, and it was pretty encouraging.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see what it would look like. Same with Martin, what it looks like against real, in air quotes, NFL players. So hopefully we get to that point at some point. CJ West flashed a little bit. And then, you know, there are guys there like Kalea Davis. He's a good rotational player. You don't want these guys being the ones who are taking the bulk of your reps, but there are guys there that are, you know, Bryce Huff is a, for what he does, he's a, it was interesting that he got three quarterback hits, I think it's what it's at. But there wasn't really a whole lot of pressure going on with us at all, really, when there wasn't some sort of all-out blitz being called. So,
yeah,
again, it's frustrating to not to at least see what these guys have. Again, Nick Barton was somebody who was, you know, for what he was pretty ballyhooed. And I wonder what the 49er coaches are seeing on a day-to-day basis that they, like you say, that they feel that Luke Gifford is a better option than he is.
You know, the 49er quarterback hits is an interesting stat, because if you look at just that metric, you would think, oh, wow, like maybe there was some pass rush there. But what that was Matt Stafford letting those plays develop and not really being too worried about getting sacked, because he knew the time that he had to throw. And he was he took a few, but he's a big dude also, like not that easy. You know, when he sees a defensive back coming in on a blitz, he's probably not too scared. And he knows that he knows that if the other team is blitzing, that just means that there's an option for him to go with the football. And that
right. There's something downfield, and it's not like he was taking those hits, throwing checkdowns. He was looking to, you know, he was looking for it all. And, so that's the trade-off that he was playing. And again, it was like what I said going into the game, that's the danger of blitzing a guy like Matt Stafford, is that he's seen it all twice, three times. So there's nothing that you're not going to, he's got all the answers to the test. That was what Brady kept saying, is that, you know, when you blitz him, he knows exactly what he's going to do. And you're giving, especially when you're throwing those defensive back blitzes at him, that means that there's somebody else streaking down the field. Oh, yeah. And that's the guy he's trying to find.
And you know, the other thing about that is, and again, this is not shade at Mac Jones, but that is the difference in their quarterback play, is Stafford holding on to the ball, waiting for the bigger plays to develop, and Mac getting rid of the ball pretty quickly. Mac himself almost did a phantom sack. Like he like, there was a play where he was falling to his left, and I still can't figure out why, and I think he one hopped somebody, but he literally fell down with nobody tackling him, which I thought was interesting. It may have just been, you know, this dude's got some bad knees, maybe his knee locked up or something. All right, so
it's the difference between Stafford just kind of trying to take what he wants and Mac taking what the defense gives him. Right. And that makes all the difference.
Right. All right. So next week, it's an all NFC West. Niners play the Cardinals. And like you said, that is it. The Cardinals are a step down and a half, maybe, from the Rams. Though, you know, you don't want to take them lightly. There won't be any Kyler, which I think, you know, you're probably happy with. I know I'm happy about that. Mm-hmm. Kyler can for whatever reason, we don't play well against him. But then, and since we have some Rams and Seahawks fans in the chat, it is the first time this season that the Rams and the Seahawks get together. So it is in LA, but like we said, doesn't really mean anything because it's all dependent on how many of the other team's fans actually can make the trip to LA. But at this point, obviously the Niners are third, I would say, behind both of those teams. There's a clear talent drop off with these injuries for the 49ers. If the Niners are not injured and you go mano a mano, I think they stack up pretty well with both of those teams. But as the Niners are injured, it is not the case. But how do you have the Rams and the Seahawks stacking up? I'm seeing a lot of chest puffed out with the Seahawks fans these days. And, you know, maybe they don't know that, you know, come December and January that, you know, Sammy Darnold kind of turns into a pumpkin. But, you know, there is a faith, there is a confidence with Seahawks fans right now. And, you know, the Rams have kind of been good, you know, for a while now. So Seahawks, not as good, but this year they have a really good football team. Who do you think has the better football team at this point?
I agree with you about Sam Darnold. Ultimately, I believe he's the guy he's always been, but I am a real big believer in Mike McDonald and his defense. They are really, really good. And kind of like where we found ourselves with Darnold last year, Smith and Jigba he's a really, really good receiver.
He's got the best numbers of any receiver in football. Like his yardage is so far ahead of like the next two players. He's like, you know, it's kind of like when Jerry Rice would lead the league in receiving yardage and like the next player behind him is like 300 yards less. Like that, like that's the kind of year Smith and Jigba is having.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where like last year in the regular season, you know, Sam Darnold, if you're throwing to Justin Jefferson, you know, I don't say this lightly as a LSU Tiger fan. You know, I would put Njigba this year right up there with Chase and Jefferson in terms of those guys. Where I mean, and you say the number and the numbers back it up that you just feed him the ball. You know, there was that one game that the Flacco, that was what he did. He threw Chase the ball 23 times, which is, you know, that's like high school stuff. You know, you rarely see that kind of usage. But Seahawks, I mean, he's been very good this year. They got Shahid. I wasn't able to see that configuration today because obviously I was watching our game. So I didn't get to watch not a second of the Cardinals Seahawks, but I'll watch it tomorrow. I definitely just on the defensive from the defensive standpoint and the way they're moving, I would have to give the slight nod to the Seahawks right now. But the Rams are for real, obviously. I can't wait to watch that game. When do we play tomorrow? Next week?
I think it's 1 o'clock.
So it's going to be another one where we're all kind of playing at the same time. Yeah, I can't wait to. So I'll probably end up watching that game, that Seahawks game. You know, after the day after. But yeah, that's going to be 2 weeks of all NFC West. That's pretty cool. I can't recall that happening. And I guess maybe because it just didn't matter.
Yeah.
It wasn't a part of my consciousness the way it is this season. And again, Jacoby Brissett had been playing pretty well with the Cardinals. You know, they kind of got, you know, and I didn't even see how that game ended up. I know they were up big at one, you know, 38-7 or something like that pretty early. I don't even know if, you know, the Cardinals did anything to like make it close, or if it was just an ass kicking all the way through. They didn't really do. Is that the same score as ours?
Oh, is it? What is it? The 44. Exact same score? Or we were 42-26.
Okay, so 44-22. Wow. Yeah. So both of the
was actually the same score as Detroit Washington too. 44-22.
I knew I saw that somewhere else. Yeah. So yeah, I think you were 100% right. There's a clear demarcation at the top of the NFC. And as much as I would love the Niners to be in that mix, I just don't think they are in the same class as those two teams. But as we discussed earlier in the podcast, I don't think they need to be to make the playoffs. And then, as we know, I guess not so much in the NFL, but, once you get into the tournament, who knows? And you never know how those teams above you, how they are going to, make it into the tournament in terms of, we're dealing with injuries now. You never wish that on anybody, but who knows? Once you get in the playoffs, you never know how those teams are going to be fixed for, we saw it last year with Detroit that, they had that gaudy record, like 14-2, but by the time they got to the playoffs, they were just a mash unit.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you get so many injuries that it's just hard to, and again, I'm not wishing that on anybody, but as a Niner fan, that's your hope, is that we just continue to get better.
Yeah.
And that by the time we get to the playoffs, we are as healthy as we've been all season and we're playing our best football. And, at that point, you just take your swings and who knows what happens. I don't, as a fan, I would love it. My rational self doesn't allow me to dream about us like playing at Levi in February, because I just don't think we're just not that good a team. But who knows?
Rams fans who are watching, they know exactly what you're talking about, because who played Philly in the playoffs better than they did last year? And I don't think that they thought it was necessarily their year last year, but they played that game. That was a fantastic football game. And they were still close.
10 more minutes. And yeah, they gave the Eagles everything they could. They got out of there alive. They survived that game.
Yeah.
The Eagles did. It's that would be, and that we're way, way down the road. But that is what I'm hoping for, as we just continue to try to get better and get healthy. And because I just think that at this point, we're unless we just absolutely shit the bed, or knock on wood, somebody else gets injured on the offense, we're going to be there. So I think we should just we are getting better, and we're peaking once we get there is my hope. And then who knows?
You know what's so interesting about the schedule? Because the Niners do not play the Seahawks until the very last game of the season. And they played them in the opener. So, open and then they close with the same team. So that's pretty interesting. Just to go back to the stat I was mentioning about Smith and Jigba, from a yards per game perspective, he is so head and shoulders above everybody else. He averages 118.5 yards per game. Second is one Puka Nacua with 101.6. And then you get to Chase at 92. And then it goes all the way down to 84.9, and that's George Pickens. And then they have a stat called big plays, which is, I think, any plays over 20 yards. And Smith and Jigba head and shoulders mm-hmm. above everybody with 17, and the next highest is George Pickens with 12. So he is having one of those seasons. The only thing he hasn't really done too much is get in the end zone. Actually, Devontae Adams leads the NFL in receiving touchdowns with 8. So he got one today against us. So, all right. So we're going to wrap this. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, no. I was just going to comment on how he cooked my man Mustafa on that out route. He was overmatched. But yeah, it was. Yeah, I didn't have anything of substance to say.
All right. So also just wanted to shout out Captain Niner, who was holding it down with MDs in the chat amongst these very happy Ram and Seahawks fans. And you should be happy. Your teams are really good football teams. All right. So that's going to be it for us. So we'll be back next week after the Niners and Cardinals. And we'll probably be talking a little bit about that Rams and Seahawks game as well. So love to see all the folks in the chat. Thank you, Rod, for hanging out. By the way, Rod, my son, because I went to the game with both of my boys, and JJ said that, you know, he's got his commute in the morning. He's going to listen to this show. And he said that he really enjoys you specifically and thinks you really know your stuff. So you got a nice little shout out from my youngest. And he's a listener, so he likes Brad and I together as well on Thompson and Clark. He likes Brad, he likes you, and so he didn't say anything about me, but oh well.
Thank you. You guys have between the game you took me to, you guys are, and then your podcast, you know, I'm like a Giant fan now on on the low. As an East Bay guy, that's kind of hard to admit.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Thank you to everybody. We'll see you next week. For Rod, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.